How many people ever went to the Records Revisited store in New York? Okay, yeah, all right. I'm not surprised, I went there too. For our next presentation, this is going to be a team effort, and which one of you will go first? Okay, so we'll start with Patrick's bio. Patrick J. Middling has been the sound archivist at the Belfer Audio Archive Special Collections Research Center, Syracuse University Libraries, since 2011. He received his AM in Linguistics in 2007 from the University of Chicago, where he also worked as a preservation assistant, graduate research assistant in the Digital Media Archives. And he is joined by Jennifer Vaughn. Since 2013, Jennifer has been music cataloger at Syracuse University Libraries. She received an MSI, from the University of Michigan School of Information in 2013, and has two additional degrees in music performance. She is also an active performing musician in the Central New York region, and their presentation is Revisiting Records Revisited, Cataloging the Morton J. Savada Collection at Syracuse University.
Good afternoon. In 2014, we began a joint project between the Belfer Audio Archive and the SU Library's cataloging department to reduce our backlog of unprocessed audio recordings by creating a database to be used by graduate students. Today, we are going to talk about the evolution of this project, lessons we have learned, and goals for its future application and development. In 2008, Syracuse University acquired the entire inventory of Records Revisited, Morton J. Savada's record shop located in Midtown Manhattan. The recordings portion of the collection consists of over 200,000 10 and 12-inch 78 RPM discs. The acquisition of the collection was reported locally and nationally, and so with all of this attention, we were highly motivated to start processing the collection. However, certain limitations prevented us from doing so. The collection was stored in an off-site location which did not have space for processing. We didn't have enough staff to devote to either the archival processing of the records or the description of the recordings. Belfer had yet to receive the Andrew W. Mellon grant establishing Jenny Doctor as the director and myself as the sound archivist, and the acquisitions and cataloging department was in the midst of its own grant project. But in 2013, space finally opened up that provided both longer-term storage and processing space. The Savada gift was amongst the first collections targeted to be moved, and so now that we had the physical space to start, we needed to develop an agile and creative way to process the collection that moved us both towards usability and discoverability. But what did that entail, and how could we build a tool to accommodate the various aspects of inventory control and description? Most of the recent past processing projects at Belfer were little more than just one-off spreadsheets. And we wanted to stop that. So we already had provisions for two graduate student workers and one student intern. And we needed to maximize what little we had and still produce a solid product. We wanted connected data that, once collected, could be tailored or repurposed as needed. Through conversation and many meetings, we developed the idea for a database that would integrate our need for minimal bibliographic description as well as archival processing notes. As a first step, however, we needed to develop a metadata profile. Jennifer will give us a rundown of cataloging sound recordings at SU and the development of that profile.
Hi. Many sound archives face difficulties surrounding the inability of traditional cataloging and methods of archival description to deal with processing very large collections of sound recordings. While a lot of progress has been made in recent years, from the National Jukebox to the Discography of American Historical Recordings and many other projects, we still have a long way to go. Our library is committed to providing high-quality metadata and full-level cataloging for our historic sound recordings, and we are fortunate to have two full-time music catalogers. At SU, we typically provide LC subject headings, as well as medium of performance and genre form terms, full analytics, and we create authorities wherever possible. We frequently consult with Belfer staff to tailor our practice. Together, we've devised policies for recording condition terminology, take numbers, and for cataloging sets and their cover art. So our work is quite thorough, and it's informed by what researchers want to find in catalog records, but it is time and resource intensive. We recognize that there might be room for something a little more product, less processy, that doesn't require a ton of training and is not dependent on complex and expensive cataloging tools and systems. So we decided to cut processing time by reducing the level of descriptive metadata and by using a custom database that would be more user-friendly for non-catalogers. The data could then be transformed into usable records in our local library catalog. Within the context of creating minimal level records, we still wanted the end result to have quite a bit of searchable discographical information. We based our metadata profile on RDA's set of core elements and tried to give the records a similar look and feel to the full level cataloging we normally do. In addition, we decided that we should limit the amount of outside research done by our student workers in order to increase productivity. So names were not checked against an authority file, inaccuracies were not necessarily corrected, and disks were not dated or given a place of publication, and no subject headings were supplied. So the workers check WorldCat to find if there is existing cataloging, and they also check our own OPAC for possible duplicates that we might have in our stacks, but otherwise they make the entries in the database with no resources other than the disk itself. They visually inspect it, not listen to it. So here are the metadata elements that we ended up including in our profile. That might be pretty small. So the title and statement of responsibility, those elements provide a surrogate of the disk label itself, exactly as it appears on the label. We provide all, oops, I went too far. There we go. Set numbers, catalog numbers, matrix numbers, and take numbers, and all variants that might appear on the shellac itself as opposed to how it looks on the label. We record all of those and also give descriptions about the carrier, including the size, speed, material, sound characteristics, etc. And those are easy to provide because the collection is basically uniform in its characteristics. We also provide a few elements that describe the content. And we do index every name that appears on the label, although those lists aren't controlled. And also, of course, the label. So we decided to supply a date range and place of publication for all the disks en masse in order to save time, since supplying these details is frequently very time consuming. But based on our knowledge of the collection and bolstered by a preliminary sample we took of disks, we felt it was safe to assume that the majority of the recordings were domestic, and were also recorded after the development of the electrical process. So we set the place of publication for all the disks as United States and the date range as between 1925 and 1959. We also estimated that nearly half of the recordings might already have full level cataloging in OCLC. So a sizable portion of the collection would have full cataloging thanks to the efforts of other institutions. And finally, we collected item level information. That includes condition terminology, and we took those terms from an in-house controlled vocabulary that we developed, and the number of copies, which first took quite a lot of discussion about what is a copy. And we decided in the end that if it's a different take, or if the label is quite different, then that counts as a distinct entry in the database. So we also describe those differences in item-specific notes, and also mark if we think that the disc might have exhibition potential. And now Patrick.
Okay, so the Savada database was built in 2014, and at this stage in my career and my life, I have to admit, I really liked SU, so the database looks a little like Otto. The database was divided up into four sections, each numbered in order, and I really looked at it as if it was a worksheet that the students would fill out. I wanted to make it incredibly easy for them to go from section to section. So here's a closer look at the sections that we used. Section one, copy cataloging. Does an OCLC record exist? If so, the number goes in the box. Original cataloging, basically label, extent, speed, catalog matrix numbers. And then we had a section for all records, which this would be where we would have additional content description, like information, like take numbers, that wouldn't necessarily be in an OCLC copy cataloging record, but we wanted to make sure we had it even for those copy catalog numbers. And then some condition and variation observations. And then lastly, we had all of the, for original records, we had more specific bibliographic information and processing notes. If anything needed special attention, or if the regular rehousing, resleeving, and reboxing workflows could not be followed, it would be noted here by the students. And basically, after we built this, and after the metadata dictionary, we created the metadata dictionary in training and support documentation to go along with the database.
The metadata dictionary is a 10-page document created to assist our students working on the Savada collection. It is intended to frame our main training session and also to serve as a desk reference tool. And there's actually a link to it in the database itself, so it's easy to reference. It contains specific instructions and plenty of colorful examples. We orient workers to the Groove disk format, which many of our grad students haven't really worked with that format before, and it provides context about labels and where information can be found on the label. The dictionary also provides instructions for searching WorldCat, because that can be quite tricky to try to find existing copy, and it also shows how to search our own local catalog to see if we have a duplicate with an RDI record, which is also tricky. And then it just provides what you'd expect to find in a metadata dictionary, definitions of data elements and controlled vocabulary terms where applicable. And it also provides information about how to format the data entry. So it will give information about how to transcribe, what punctuation to add, how to deal with capitalization, diacritics, and inaccuracies. And we have just finalized version 1.1 of the dictionary for this summer, and that involved a lot of copy editing and adjustments for the look and feel of our new database. With lessons learned from the work done in 2014, we were able to provide clear definitions and more appropriate examples.
So the question is, what did we come up with after one summer of work? So in the summer of 2014, the bulk of the work was done by two graduate students over 8 weeks, each working 20 hours a week. When all was said and done, they had processed just under a little under 1% of the collection. But in real numbers, if you have 200,000 that you're starting with, 1,389 in a summer is not that bad. So 1,389 disks were entered into the database, resleeved, rehoused, reboxed, and reshelved. And this was there were 740 extant OCLC records identified, and we then created the basis for 615 new original local records.
So I created those MARC records out of the data, and Patrick sent me all of it dumped into an Excel spreadsheet. But before I went into turning these elements into actual MARC records, I invested quite a lot of time cleaning up the data. And I noticed that some of it suffered from inconsistency. So I'll get back into that later. But I used MARC Edit, which is a free suite of metadata translation and editing tools to create MARC records from our FileMaker Pro data. I used primarily the delimited text translator, which maps database fields directly to MARC fields and outputs data in a MARC format. So I kind of moved back and forth between Excel and MARC Edit to clean up the data and concatenate certain fields. And I added quite a bit of notes. As I mentioned, most of the disks were 10-inch and they're all shellac, so I added a lot of elements that applied to everything, including GIF notes. And then I had to add all of the leader and fixed fields that are required in MARC records. So then I validated everything and compiled it back into MARC format. So they are ready now to be loaded into our local catalog whenever the library decides to formally open the collection. And at that time, we can also attach our holdings to those 740 records that are in WorldCat that we know we hold now. And then those records can be imported into our local catalog as well with a Savada GIF note. So here's an example. Sorry, I know it's hard to see, but it's just to give you an idea of what the data look like in a spreadsheet. And here's what it looks like when I turned it into a MARC record, much cleaner. And then since not everyone reads MARC, and it's hard to read, here's what it might look like when it's loaded into our local catalog as a detailed record. So the issues we came across in the data cleanup and transformation process guided us significantly as we set about updating our documentation, how we trained, and our general workflows. And for 2015, because the process is ongoing, we're continuing this year as well. And it guided significant revisions of the project, including a redesign of the database. We had initially asked the interns to input complicated, rule-heavy strings of data, punctuated with MARC subfields, and this approach proved to be somewhat unsuccessful. Having the data in large chunks made it hard for me to manipulate, and it also reduced the likelihood of being able to reuse the data in other systems. So we decided to break up the data into smaller elements wherever possible. So before, we asked the student workers to input the entire title and other title information, as well as the statement of responsibility, and to interject punctuation and MARC subfields. So that was before. And this year, we're just asking them to input the title as it appears on the label. And then separately in another field of the database, they would put in the statement of responsibility. So much simpler and not really tied to MARC so much. We also noticed that there are many, many disks in the collection that only differ by take number. And our student workers were having to re-input the entire batch of information for each disk when they only differed really by one character. So there was a lot of redundancy. And we decided to add a way to generate a duplicate record in the database. So that should really save the interns a lot of time and save them from having to re-input all of this data over and over. And here's Patrick with more on the GUI.
The Savada database was a simple tool for a single collection, but its success got us thinking a little bit larger. Could we extend the concept to a broader application, that is for new projects and for other formats? We thought so, but to do this, we needed a near complete redesign. So please say hi to Mr. Database, our new minimal records database. Rather than be a single project, Mr. DB takes as a starting point any project, so you can have an intellectual group that you define based on what your project is. In the Savada database, the data was spread out, which led to inconsistencies. You followed the worksheet sort of idea, but in Mr. DB, we consolidated the layouts and had simpler interfaces. We also introduced tab controls that, once set, took the user directly to that format subset. So if you picked LP, all of the LP subset elements that you would need would be highlighted, and you'd know to fill those out. Field placement depended on the type of cataloging you were doing, and there was only one instance of each in the Savada database. So these new layouts allowed us to duplicate the fields to allow more localized data entry. The Savada database had a very flat structure. It had one table with many fields and no portals. Mr. DB has a better relational structure and portals to handle multiple entries. So now we have tables for multiple pieces of data rather than an arbitrary number of fixed fields. That is, composer, arranger 1 through 6, we just have tables or portals now for names. And finally, the Savada database was orange, and Mr. DB is a more pleasant beige, brown, and blue combination. As far as implementation of our new database, we will continue to use the Savada project this summer, as well as to start using it to process our backlog of LPs.
We missed the forest for the trees a couple times during the initial planning period in 2014, as is probably inevitable when trying to plan a big project in a short period of time. We neglected to barcode the disks the first summer, but now we've added a portal for that information and have installed barcode readers at the processing area workstations. In addition to making needed updates in the metadata dictionary, we saw a clear need for more interaction with our student workers. We decided it would be more practical to meet weekly to go over each week's problem records together. Many had been marked as needing further review the first summer, but with no indication of why. Our new approach addresses the confusion caused by leaving so many records like this, and it also allows us to more quickly identify and remedy problems as they come up instead of waiting until the end of the summer to deal with things that aren't working. And we believe this will increase the quality of our metadata and also promote efficiency. Patrick?
We would ideally like to have more funding and staffing and to work year-round with graduate students and undergraduates alike. We would love to work with SU's iSchool to develop additional partnerships around this project. We've come up with many other longer-term goals and dreams surrounding this project. Our less mark-dependent design might someday lead to a web tool or linked data applications tied to technical and preservation metadata. We are trying to think about creative and collaborative ways to enhance the records, perhaps asking the community of experts to help provide metadata. And we're also looking into using OpenRefine to reconcile our uncontrolled name index with the VIOF authority file.
So we think our database fills a real need in this age of tight budgets, small staff, and large backlogs. Though the cataloging is minimal, it provides access for our collections where none previously existed. We hope to see both the database and the quality of the records continue to be refined and improved. And we've only given a very high-level overview today of this project, so if you're interested in hearing more, please don't hesitate to contact us or come talk to us after the presentation. So thank you for your time.
Okay, we're making history here with all these presentations finishing inside the distance. And Dan Blazek will be next. He needs a minute or two to get his own computer set up. So why don't we use that time to take any questions need to be asked. Anybody? Any questions for Patrick or Jennifer? Yes? Where? Oh.
Okay, here's my problem. I'm finishing the world's first Shakespeare discography. I've been unemployed for a decade. I've approached a variety of people, from Folger to the Library to the British Museum to other universities, including the faculty of the English department at West Virginia University. No one has offered any help for me. No one has offered even to review or check what I'm doing. Can you give me advice of what I should do?
This is not on.
Use that microphone so it will get picked up.
In times like this, I quote Winston Churchill, never, 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 never quit. I know that I can't help you because that's not my bailiwick, but I mean, to relate it to our presentation, we ran into problems along the way, all the way. And really what we just did was stepped back, look at what was wrong, try to correct it. It's just the way that you manage workflows. Like George Blood's presentation yesterday about quality control, quality testing, I think the same thing can apply to doing research. And you just have to keep banging on doors and you gotta keep working at it, and eventually you're gonna have a subset of data that you can work with.
Yeah, and we wanted to get the perfect data for our project, but we weren't asking our staff to do the things that they could do. So we had to kind of take a look at our approach to how we were training our workers and how we had designed our project to see if we could improve it in order to get a better response from them as well. We don't know if it's working yet because we just started this summer's work.
Yeah, they start again on Monday, so.
Yeah. Hi. When you were resleeving these records, are you making any notes of any markings that Savada or anyone else had put on?
Yeah, so what we'll do is we transcribe the note. Like, if there are a lot of notes on a disk, that sleeve, we have a whole re-sleeving process where
The disc is put into a discophile. The sleeve is put behind it, and it's all put into a polyurethane bag. But for identification purposes, on the discophile, we will at minimum put the label and catalog number for it. And then that's where the barcode will go in the gift note sticker. But if there are a few notes, we might transcribe those notes. But we tend to want to keep the heavy, extensive notes on the sleeves that were with the record in the shop and with the item on the shelf.